Earlier in the service, we read from Isaiah 53. That's our sermon passage this morning. I'm going to not reread it since it was there, but you might want to have it open because I am going to refer to it a few times, maybe several times. I was thinking you all are sticking with us in what has been kind of like the heaviest of the Advent services. You know, as the weeks have gone along, we've been kind of turning the screw a little bit tighter to get to this service, which has been a lot of words and a lot of difficult imagery, and that's on purpose. You can blame me. Don't blame Randy. I'll take it. It's all me. But you might be thinking, well, I should say to stick with us because we're going to do some work here. And know that next week in the service is going to be just a big party. I mean, we'll streamers and fireworks and, or we'll sing anyway. But you might be thinking, you know, this is Christmas time for crying out loud. And we're talking about death and all this judgment stuff. It's just kind of heavy. You know, if Christmas is supposed to be about candy canes, you might feel like you're sucking on one of those, like, Sour Patch Kids at this point. You know, like, oh, I was not expecting that. But it's kind of like what happened to me in junior high. A lot of things happened to me in junior high. That, I could say that to me. Anyway, when I was in junior high, I went fishing at this little farm pond down the street, and I ended up getting into some poison sumac. I don't know if you've ever gotten into poison sumac before. Do we have sumac up here? I was looking for really. Is there sumac up here? Okay. Well, I got into some there, and so my forehead broke out in a rash, and it itched like crazy. So I was treating it like you would treat poison sumac. You know, you put cream on it, and that's great in junior high to have like calamine lotion smeared on your forehead. Everybody wants to see their friends like that, but. But what happened was it itched for a while, and then it started getting really sore. Not just itchy, but like really painful. And my head kind of swelled a little bit. And then I started feeling pretty ill. And then I had this like raging fever, like knocked on, like on my bed, fever, terrible. And then I'm at the doctor, and the doctor is brandishing this needle that was clearly too big for my arm. Some of you know where this is going. Anybody that has a needle phobia will know who you are because you're about to pass out. So if somebody like just kills over, then they're the ones that are afraid of needles. But basically, what I'm looking at this needle thinking, you're going to put that where? And for what? I've got poison sumac. Well, the doctor did everything that you'd expect for him to do with that needle because the problem is that I had a rather significant bacterial infection. And I actually still have a little bit of scar left, I think, from it. But you see, I walked into the doctor thinking poison sumac, and the doctor's treating me with this big, huge needle because there was a deeper problem. The thing is that when you misunderstand what the problem is, you kind of anticipate a different solution. And that's exactly what I was doing then. Well, this Advent season, we've been looking at a handful of things that are kind of unexpected, mysterious about Jesus coming. And I think that today what we're looking at is probably the hardest of them all because we're talking about Jesus coming to die. When we walk through the shopping malls, we don't see lots of pictures of bloody crosses. But yet, that's what we're saying is what Jesus came for, to die. It's almost like, wait, does that fit? Now, we all know, or many of you know, that there is this Easter story, too. Christmas is not the only story that we talk about here. There's this Easter story. But I'm not sure that we always make the connection strongly enough. It's almost as though we do Christmas, and then we do kind of the Easter thing. But we don't always connect the two. And sometimes that happens, I think, because Christmas has taken on a lot of other stuff with it. Sometimes we act as though Christmas is really for celebrating family and snow and cider and kindness and candy canes and being nice to people. Now, I think that view demonstrates that what we think we have is a deficit of things like kindness and cider and snow and niceness. We do have a deficit of snow. That's another topic. And I don't disagree that there is a necessity for that. To be nice is good. It's nice. But Jesus didn't come to deal with a deficit of niceness. Jesus didn't come to deal with a deficit of cider or snow or generosity or general good cheer. That's not why he came. Jesus came to deal with something very different. If Jesus came to deal with niceness, then this death thing doesn't quite fit. So what did Jesus come to do? Well, he came to die. So what I want us to do as we look at this text, I want you to refer back to the text that was read earlier. Very Christmassy, right? He was wounded for our transgressions. It's everything you like to read at Christmas time. But I want to ask two questions of this text this morning in the hopes that it will help us understand what is going on with this thing about this Jesus coming to die. The first question is, what's the point of his death? And then the second question, what's our response to this death? So let's look at those in turn. There are three things that if we look to Isaiah 53, we can see that help us understand what is the point of this death. Now this portion, Isaiah 53, shows up in an extended prophecy about a messianic servant of God who's going to pop up on the scene. He's going to do some things for God's people. He's going to act on behalf of and with the authority of God himself. That's what's going on in these chapters around our passage this morning. And if we had read the prior passages, we got into this a little bit in it here. I was going to start in 4. We grabbed a hold of 3, which makes good sense. But if we had read the prior passage, we would have seen that this passage about he was wounded, he's bearing our griefs, all that kind of stuff like that, it flows out of a passage about Yahweh showing up and showing his strength on behalf of his people. With this good news message of Yahweh showing up onto the scene and flexing his arms and acting in strength. And then we get the death of the servant. Here we see the people's problem. We see that in verses 4 through 6. Here the servant is dealing with two things. One thing that he's dealing with is griefs and sorrows, which the way the poetry works, that's one thing. The servant is showing up to deal with griefs and sorrows. These are the things in life that are just plain hurtful, injustices. The things that happen to us that are out of our control, that we bear the weight of, that we carry the load of, the servant comes to deal with those kinds of things. And in fact, these are the very words that we see in verse 3. This is why it's great that these are in here. Look what this servant is doing. He was despised, rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. In verse 4, he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. However, the problem at hand involves something more than just these injustices, more than just these sorrows and griefs, these sadnesses that we experience. Verse 5 also talks about transgressions and iniquities. Again, the poetry referring to one big thing here. And these are the things that we do. Not just the things that are done to us, but the things that we do. The ways in which we act unjustly. The things that we do that are against God's commands and against God's character, these are our things. And in fact, it's hard to escape the pronouns in these verses. It's there's pounding, it's our and us and we, and it's not hypothetical. This is rather personal. It's about us. In Isaiah 53, the problem that the servant is coming to deal with is a problem of sin. Jesus didn't come because we all need to be a little bit nicer. The problem is that sin has wrenched the very fabric of existence, the fabric of our lives, and we feel that grinding dissonance because of it. We feel that grinding dissonance in our relation to God. We feel it in our relationship to each other. We feel it in relationship to the world that we live on, this place. And many of us very deeply feel that grinding dissonance within ourselves, how we relate to our own hearts and our own minds and our own bodies. So that's the problem. Problem is sin. If sin is a problem, what's the solution? Well, look in verses 7 through 11. It's interesting to me that this messianic servant doesn't show up with an army to take care of the problem, not here at least. He doesn't show up with like a 5-hour energy drink to kind of give you that spiritual boost you need to kind of push through the day. That's not what he shows up with. And that's because the problem, the deepest problem, the most fundamental problem is not that we need a little bit of help. You know, just a little nudge to kind of get over the bump, and then everything will be okay. That's not the real problem. We don't need just a little bit of jolt. The problem is that sin has wrecked stuff. Our sin. Other people's sin. So in verses 7 through 11, what we end up with here is imagery and language that is steeped in Leviticus 16. Now, if you don't automatically know it's in Leviticus 16, that makes perfect sense to me. But Leviticus 16 is this passage about the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement is the day where a spotless, innocent lamb becomes the carrier of all the guilt of Israel's sin for the year. Their sin, their guilt, is symbolically placed upon this lamb, who is then executed as a symbol of this transfer that's taken place. The lamb acts as a substitute to stand in the place of Israel, to bear the weight of judgment for having sinned in all of sin's sundry expressions, every kind. But the thing is that those lambs didn't fix things forever, because then there would have been a single day of atonement, and we're done. But it happened year after year after year. Those lambs couldn't fix things forever. But in Isaiah, we see that the bar has been raised dramatically, because the one in Isaiah 53 that's taking the judgment is this innocent one who is so closely aligned with Yahweh that he fixes things for all time. See, the solution has to match the problem. The problem ran deep. The solution has to run just as deep. So let's notice then, the problem is sin. The solution is this substitution, this act that happens by the servant. But notice also the result of this solution. The servant actually solves the problem. Do you notice that in verses 10 through 12? The servant actually bore the guilt, carried the weight, dealt with the sin, brought the healing. This verse 5, this idea of him bringing us healing, or I guess where I should just look at it. He was pierced for our transgression. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was a chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. This healing here, I think, is referring to this covenantal act of bringing peace and healing within their relationship to their sovereign God. This is what the servant did. He made it happen. The covenantal breach that occurred has been taken care of by the servant's death, and now the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant can be renewed. Because you notice in verses 10 through 12 that the servant is now exalted. The many that were unrighteous are now counted as righteous. They're now considered to be righteous. They're in the relationship that they were intended for. And all of Yahweh's riches are now shared with that very same group. And don't miss this also. It's subtle, but I think very important, that the servant who was killed, who bore the weight, who acted as the lamb, do you notice that at the end of this chapter, he's alive? Here we have subtle, for sure, but aspects of blessings of the covenant that include resurrection. Now, this is a thickly theological passage in a service that's been sort of thick. And I acknowledge that, and I'm glad. I'm glad it's been super thick, because I want to make sure that we get the weight of what is happening. This passage is thickly theological, but the point of the Messiah's death is this, that the God of heaven desires to put things right, and the substitutionary death of the sinless servant is the only way to fix it. It's the only way to fix it. See, the Messiah didn't come to inspire seasonal pleasantries in us. The Messiah came to die that we might be restored to the Father. That's what this is about. But there's this great passage in Luke 24, it's at the end of that gospel, where these two disciples are walking along the road to Emmaus, a little village, and Jesus shows up unrecognized to them, and he starts talking to them, and they're just, I don't know if they're clouded by just their mourning, or they've had their world upended, but he starts saying, you know, what are you talking about? And they're, well, we're talking about this Jesus. We thought he was the one. We thought he was the Messiah. Like all this, you know, all this imagery that they'd been bringing up to this point, that we thought Jesus was it, but then he went off and died. What are you supposed to do with a Messiah that dies? It's a good question. What are we supposed to do with the Messiah who came to die? Well, I think, though, the answer is in one of our first hymns. Do you remember early on in the service, "Oh, how shall I receive him?" I think the answer, what do we do with this servant who comes to die, this Messiah that comes to die? It's in that hymn. We receive him. But how? Let me give you three ways that I think we go about looking at this servant, looking at this Messiah who came to die because the problem is our sin. What do we do with that? Three ways that we go about really receiving that. The first is this. I think that you and I need to get really honest with ourselves about what our real problem is. Sometimes we feel dissonance in our lives and we try to pin it to lots of things. We might think, well, the reason I'm feeling kind of grumpy or the reason I'm feeling this sort of ache is because I have a lack of things. I've got a lack of money or friends or family or a lack of purpose. And then what we do is we go about our lives trying to fix that problem. Getting more money, finding more friends, having a better sense of our career arc, all those kinds of things. We go after that. Now, I'm not saying those things are unimportant. But sometimes what we're doing when we try to fix those problems that we're missing, that, you know what, at the core, the real issue in our hearts is that we're made for glory. We're made for glory. But yet, sin has made this dramatic and nasty intrusion in this amazing place that God has made and the fabric of what it means for us to be God's image bearers. And sometimes what we do is we look at these other sort of ancillary issues and never get to the fact that, you know what, I've got to deal with the sin in my life. We need to get honest about what the actual problem is that we're experiencing. And that means that we've got to stop trying to escape sin, to paper over our sin, to call it something that it isn't. You know, some of you have been sinned against, and the reality is that that awful story really is actually awful. It is. It is actually awful. And trying to couch it in different terms or to hide from it or to kind of live your life as though it didn't happen, that's not going to fix the problem. It's not going to make your pain go away. It's not going to ease the dissonance in your life. That sin that somebody else did to you has to be dealt with as it is. It needs a deeper solution than trying to hide. But similarly, that's a lot of syllables. Similarly, some of you know that you're engaging in things in your life that you have no business engaging in your life. Behaviors that you're giving into, ways that you're treating people. And some of you are making some really just silly excuses about them. Maybe even twisting the doctrines of grace to try to excuse them. And at some point, you're going to have to get honest about those things and say, you know what, the problem is not this list of ancillary things. The problem is that I've got this sin in my life I've got to deal with through Jesus. But it's not going to happen until you're willing to be honest about what the actual problem is. So let me ask you this morning, are you willing to be honest about the problem? That's what it means to start, at least, receiving this Messiah who died. But if the first step is to be honest about what the actual problem is, the second step, I think, to receiving the Messiah who died is to be willing to accept the actual solution to the problem. And that is this substitutionary death of God's servant, the Messiah. That's the solution to your problem. See, the solution to your problem is the death of Jesus for your sin. Not just for sin in general. Like, I'm glad Jesus died to take care of sin. Jesus came to deal with your sin. But that means that you can't fix you. If you're willing to acknowledge what the real problem is in your life and recognize that there's this issue of sin and brokenness, that you can't fix that, Jesus is the only means of dealing with our sin. The thing is, though, that there are different ways that we try to avoid Jesus as the solution. There's an a-religious way to avoid it, to try to deny it, and that, you know, that looks like what you would expect, to kind of refuse to live as though Jesus did something and just kind of persist in your sin and go about all that stuff with impunity. That's an a-religious way to avoid the solution of Christ. But, you know, there's also a very religious way to avoid Christ as the only solution for your problem, for your sin. And what that looks like is it looks like us giving lip service to the grace shown in Christ while at the same time building up this like movie set facade that on the one side looks like a nice cantina but on the other side is just propped up by a 2x4 here and there. And you see, some of us are putting up this religious facade, this performance that says, I've got it all together, I'm fine, I don't want anybody else to see that I'm on the flip side of this facade. It's just a total train wreck. You see, that's actually a very religious way to ignore the grace of Jesus. To say, I'm going to keep my life tidy, at least on the outside. Even while on the inside, I'm refusing to accept that Christ has done something for my sin. That's a very religious way for us to stiff-arm the mercy and grace of Jesus. It's just kind of a nice way of stiff-arming Jesus. A pleasant-looking way to stiff-arm Jesus. But you see, receiving this Christ who died means going to him and saying, you know what? I can't fix me. I can't fix me. And all of this religious juggling and facade building that I'm doing won't fix me. I'm going to trust in what you've done. So are you willing this morning to accept that Jesus' death is the only means of dealing with your sin? Your efforts at looking right won't fix you. But if you're honest about the real problem and you're willing to accept that the only way to fix it is by the death of the Messiah, then that leaves a third step or third way that we receive him. And it's this. If you've done those first two things, then you can actually live into the results. You can actually embrace those last verses where we see the exalted servant who's actually dealt with sin, who's actually inaugurated the blessings of the covenant. You can actually live into that. We live into these results, the assurance of his success, his resurrection glory, the blessings of the new covenant that are ours now in Christ Jesus. You can live into that. What I mean is that we also receive our Messiah by acting on the basis of our assurance because of what he's done, instead of acting on the basis of our brokenness. I mean, what that means is that when we feel this throbbing of an old wound, of even someone else's sin against us, we don't retreat from God as though he won't love us. That's living on the basis of our sin instead of living on the basis of our assurance. But no, we don't do that. Living into the results of what Jesus has done, even in his death, means refusing to take our identity from what's happened to us and instead saying, no, I'm going to take my identity from what Christ has done. I know that's a struggle for many of you because you still hear the pounding of this old story. Look, this is what happened to me. This is how I've been hurt. And what I want to say to you is that living into what Christ has done means saying, that happened. It really, really happened, and it stinks. But that's not who I am, because Christ has forgiven me, and I stand before him clean. But some of us, when we feel, maybe it's not the weight of injustice done to us, but we feel the guilt and the shame of a behavior or a desire that we know doesn't fit with the life of a person who's united to Jesus. We feel that, and we, again, that kind of grinding dissonance of it. Living into the results of what Jesus has done means we don't retreat from God as though we've gone too far. No. Instead, we keep coming back to the mercy and grace of Jesus until either his love for us, his overwhelming love for us, just like overwhelms our errant desires, until that happens, or until Christ sets foot again upon the earth and we join him in our exaltation. But no, we don't retreat from God because we think that, look, I've done this again. I can't believe I come back the same sin again. To live into the results of what Christ has done means to say, yes, that's what just happened. And Christ has paid for me. Christ has forgiven me. And I'm going to keep leaning into what he has done until either my desires are fixed or until he is here and I'm right. But in either event, we live our lives based on what Jesus has accomplished, not based on what we cannot accomplish. That's what it means to receive this Christ who died. Now, our service at the beginning, I mentioned that hymn, How Shall I Receive Him? And here's what we're going to do today. We're not going to end with a story about my kids or junior high or anything like that. What I want to do is I want to end the sermon by taking time to do what we've just talked about. To take a moment and receive our Messiah who comes to die, who who came today. What we're going to do is, or at least what you're going to have the opportunity to do now, is to be really honest in a time of silence. A time of silent confession even. I know we've done that in our service, but right now, in this moment, to signal our willingness to accept what Jesus has done. To be honest about it and say, yep, that's what happened. That's what was done to me. That's what I did. To be honest about what that is. It's sin, it's brokenness, it's a part of us that has to be dealt with, but can only be dealt with through Christ. But having taken some moments to be honest about that, we're going to go to Jesus. I hope that you'll go to Jesus as your only hope, the only way to fix it. And then we're going to lean into his assurance at the Lord's table, knowing that what Christ did is enough. So my hope is that in a few moments, you'll be able to hop in line on whichever side you need to be on. And having been honest with God about what you need and what's happened and all those things, you'll be able to come to this table and find assurance. Because the Christ who died is a Christ who now reigns. The Christ who died is the one who has atoned for your sin. And you can experience the assurance of that today. I hope that's what you'll do. Let's take a moment of silence, then we'll come to the Lord's table.